What you're looking at right here is a picture of northern Palestine. Up at the top there, you'll see the beautiful snow-capped Mount Hermon rising to 9,000 feet. In the spring, the snow of that mountain will melt and it will flow down about 23 miles into the great low depression called the Sea of Galilee, 12.5 miles long and 7.5 miles wide. It is the largest freshwater lake in the world, the Sea of Galilee. A lot of really important things happened in this area. Of course, Jesus preached a lot of sermons in this area, up north in Galilee. It's where he had his place of abode, was in Capernaum. Sermon on the Mount was preached up somewhere around this area, the Sea of Galilee. Peter, Andrew, James, and John made their living on that sea. They were fishermen. Well, the Sea of Galilee eventually gives up its water. Here's northern Hermon, where we were looking. It flows into the Sea of Galilee. And the Sea of Galilee gives up that life-giving water, along with four other rivers. The Sea of Galilee forms the Jordan River, which we've heard so much about in the Bible. The Jordan River, from point to point, flows some 65 miles, though if you were to follow the serpentine meandering course of the Jordan, it would be about 200 miles. So we have the Jordan River flowing from the Sea of Galilee to another very low depression of about 1,407 feet below sea level. And four other rivers, the Yarmuk, the Jabbok, the Karnon, and the Zered River. And these five rivers, while they give life and abundant blessing as they flow southward, eventually they flow into one great source down here in southern Palestine known as the Dead Sea. Some 6.5 million tons of water flow into the Dead Sea every day, but the Dead Sea does not give up a single drop. Because the waters do not flow out of the Dead Sea, the salt content is extremely high, reaching some 34%, 8 times that of the ocean. Except for minuscule amounts of bacteria and fungi, nothing lives in the Dead Sea, hence the name. It is dead. Though it is the recipient of life, it gives none in return. Now, these two great bodies of water, the Sea of Galilee here and the Dead Sea here, have been the source of many a sermon through the centuries. And even a song has been written about those two seas. I'd like you to read with me the words of that song. It's on page number 641 in your hymn book. Please take out a hymn book and read that with me just now. 641, the title is, There is a Sea. Verse 1 says, There is a sea which day by day receives the rippling rills, and streams that spring from wells of God or fall from cedared hills. But what it thus receives, it gives with glad, unsparing hand. A stream more wide with deeper tide flows on to lower land. Second verse. There is a sea which day by day receives a fuller tide, but all its store it keeps, nor gives to shore nor sea beside. Its Jordan stream, now turned to brine, lies heavy as molten lead. Its dreadful name doth e'er proclaim, that sea is waste and dead. And verse 3, which shall it be for you and me, who God's good gifts obtain. Shall we accept for self alone, or take to give again? For he who once was rich indeed laid all his glory down, that by his grace our ransomed race should share his wealth and his crown. The obvious message of this song and the geographic phenomenon, the Dead Sea and the Sea of Galilee, is a very important Bible principle, and that is the principle of stewardship. Are we, as God's children, like the Sea of Galilee, gladly, generously giving to other people of the blessings that God has freely given to us? Are we more like the Dead Sea? We're glad to receive these blessings. We're glad for the time, glad for the abilities that we have and the opportunities, but yet do not use them to serve the needs of other people. 1 Peter chapter 4, the apostle of the Lord tells us to be good stewards. 1 Peter 4, let's begin at verse 9. He says, "Be hospitable to one another without complaint, as each one has received a special gift. Employ it in serving one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God." Notice that service of one another makes us good stewards. Did you see that? Verse 11, "Whoever speaks, let him speak as it were the utterances of God. Whoever serves, let him do so as by the strength which God supplies, so that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belongs the glory and the dominion forever and ever. So let it be." All Christians, the Apostle Peter says, are stewards of the manifold grace of God. And what that means is we all have abilities, we all have talent, a multiplicity of abilities. And God, in His grace, provides opportunities for the use of those abilities. God is the enabler. He's the provider and He's the enabler. And God expects us to be good stewards, faithful stewards of these abilities and opportunities, open doors that He provides on a daily basis. God gives and God expects. Jesus once said, "To him who's given, then much is expected." God freely gives and God expects as well. Now, three gifts are mentioned here: hospitality, teaching, and serving. The question is not, has God given you gifts? That's not in question anywhere in the Bible. The question is, how are you using the gifts and the time God has provided? Are we like the Sea of Galilee, freely giving, generously giving? Are we like the Dead Sea? 1 Corinthians chapter 4, we learn some other principles about stewardship. 1 Corinthians 4, please. Beginning at verse 1. "Let a man regard us in this manner, as servants of Christ, stewards of the mysteries of God. In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that one be found trustworthy." And so in this Bible passage, we see that a steward in verse 1 is a trustee. He's a trustee. God has entrusted you. He's entrusted me with blessings. In verse 2, we see another very important characteristic of stewardship, and that is trustworthiness. God expects us as stewards to be loyal and faithful to Him. A faithful steward is always seeking the best interest and the glory of the master. He never seeks his own glory. He realizes that he is a recipient of blessings that are freely given, and they are borrowed. Just like time is borrowed, so are these abilities, and then we are to pass them on to other people freely as we have freely received them. And we never do it for our own interest. We do it for the interest of the Master. In the Bible, stewardship is not just a duty. It is a life principle. It is a way of life. It's a way of thinking. Freely I've received, freely I shall give. And I do this on a daily basis. In the same letter, 1 Corinthians in chapter 11, the Apostle Paul talks about some of the poor stewardship of the Corinthians. And here's one example, 1 Corinthians 11, 33, please. He says, "So, my brethren, when you come together to eat, wait for one another." They weren't waiting for one another. So he says, wait for one another. Verse 34, "If anyone's hungry, let him eat at home, so that you may not come together for judgment. The remaining matters I shall arrange when I come." The Corinthians were poor stewards of the gifts God had given. Chapter 1, there were divisions. They were not including one another. They were not inclusive. They had this country club mentality. You know, you're part of this clique or that clique. And this is supposed to be a family. And Paul makes it very clear to the Corinthians in the first four chapters. In chapter 5, there's immorality. And some are protecting this immoral brother. Chapter 6, lawsuits. Chapters 8 through 10, they had liberties, but they were exercising them for themselves. Chapter 11, in the Lord's Supper, they were coming to partake of the bread and fruit of the vine, but without anybody else. They were going ahead and eating and going ahead and drinking the fruit of the vine without waiting for anybody else. Paul says, if the problem is hunger, eat before you come. Take care of that at home. And don't come together to treat this like it's a meal. You wait for one another and you remember why you're doing this. And that is to glorify Jesus, to honor Jesus. And only in that way will we be blessed as we think about Jesus and revere Jesus. And then in chapter 12, concerning the gifts, look at verse 4 through 7, please. 12, 4 through 7. There are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. Varieties of ministries, same Lord. Varieties of effects, same God who works all things in all persons. Verse 7, here's the main point now. This whole section, chapters 12, 13, 14. Here it is. Each one is given the manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. For the common good. There's your point. Chapters 12, 13, 14. The main point of this context is whatever gift you have, whether it was a literal miraculous gift of the Spirit or just the ability to encourage or give a little more financially, whatever the case may be, lead the singing, lead in prayer, whatever your ability is, do it for what purpose? For the common good. You do it to serve one another. You don't take this gift God has given and go off in a corner somewhere and exercise it. They could do that. And some were doing that. Paul says you need to use that for the common good. Share that with everybody in the assembly, whether it's that gift or some other gift. You think of other people and use that time and opportunity wisely. And so no wonder Paul says what he does in chapter 13. First three verses, right? If I speak with tongues of men and of angels but do not have love, I am simply making noise, he says, if I don't have love. Verse 2, if I have a gift of prophecy, know all mysteries, all knowledge, all faith, so as to remove mountains, don't have love, I am a big fat zero in God's eyes. Verse 3, if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, deliver my body to be burned, don't have love, it profits me nada. In the end, nothing. I must love God supremely and love my neighbors myself, and that would certainly be my brethren. So, are we being good stewards here at Westlake? Are we seeing the common good? When we come here to this place on this Lord's Day or Wednesday evening, whenever we may meet, do we give? Do we sing? Do we pray? Do we observe the supper thinking of what is good for the family? not just me, but for the family. And Paul says in chapter 12, verse 25, no division, same care for one another. Okay? Same care for one another. Are we worshiping God, giving of ourselves, making an effort with the same care one for another? Do we simply come here with our own interest in mind? What's in it for me? Now, we may not verbalize that, but it could be written all over you when you come. What's in it for me? What's in this service for me? Nobody seems to greet me today. Nobody's made me feel welcome. They need to take care of me. They need to know my needs and accommodate me. I so appreciate brethren who get up and get around and greet people, extend that hand and smile and just greet people. I so appreciate that. And brethren, it means so much. That little bit can go a long way, can't it? Little things mean a lot. Just a friendly greeting. How you doing? Been praying for you. What can I be praying for? Little things like that mean a lot. Is our service to God that way, or is it simply a service of coming and going? Coming and going. We come in, we say very little, and we leave having said very little. Now I ask you, when you read the New Testament, is that being a good and faithful steward? Is that what you see the first century church doing? Simply coming together and then leaving, having said or done very little in serving one another. You know, in Matthew chapter 25, we have a parable that Jesus used to teach a very important lesson on stewardship. A parable here. It begins at verse 14, Matthew 25, 14. Let's read this parable together now. It's just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey. Immediately the one who received 5 went and traded them, gained 5 more. In the same manner, the one who received 2 gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 went away, dug in the ground, hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 came up and brought 5 more and said, Master, you've entrusted 5 talents to me. I've gained 5 more. His master said, Well done, good, faithful servant. You were faithful in a few things. I shall put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. The one who had received the 2 came and said, Master, you entrusted me with these 2. See, I've gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good, faithful servant. You were faithful in a few things. I shall put you in charge of many. Enter into the joy of your master. The one who had received the 1 talent came up and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, gathering where you scattered nothing. I was afraid. I went away and I hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what's yours. His master answered and said to him, Wicked! Lazy slave, you knew I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scattered none. You ought to have put my money in the bank. And on arrival, I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him. Give it to the one who has 10. For to everyone who has, more shall be given. He shall have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does not have shall be taken away. Cast out that worthless slave into outer darkness. In that place there should be weeping and gnashing of the teeth. Now there are 5 parts to this parable, 5 main parts. We have the master who is the Lord, Jesus Christ. We have the servants who are disciples of Jesus Christ. We have the far country, which is obviously heaven. The Lord dies, he's resurrected. Appears for 40 days, he ascends into heaven. He's gone, he says, for a long time. Far country, he leaves. Well, then he comes back. The talents are opportunities according to ability. You notice they're not abilities necessarily, but opportunities according to abilities. Opportunity to live up to our potential. Responsibility according to capability. And then here's the master's return. Judgment. Time to settle accounts. And that day's coming for every single one of us. Time to settle accounts. There are many great lessons from Matthew 25. First two go together. First of all, we all have different abilities. Some overlap, some differ. And secondly, God reckons with us as individuals whose circumstances and abilities differ. God reckons with us as individuals whose circumstances and abilities differ. He gave to each one according to his ability. And so the talents, as I see them, are opportunities. I see John Doe here. Who knows John Doe better than anybody but the creator of John Doe? God sees John Doe. He says, I know your weaknesses. I know your strengths. I know where you're weak. I know your limitations. I also know what you can do. I know your potential, John. He saw that in Peter. We'll call you Peter. We see what kind of potential you have. We'll call you Rock because that's your potential. You have the ability to be a rock. And of course, Peter became that rock, didn't he? And a wonderful shepherd for the early church. Now, the Lord knows every single one of us. He knows you better than you know yourself. He knows you. And because of His wisdom and knowledge of you, He gives you talents based on what He sees in you. And He says, now, here they are. And it's up to you to make use of them before I come back. You see, that's your responsibility. He sees what you can do, and it's up to us to make use of what He has provided for us. Third, we'll not be judged according to the ability of other people. You see that? Some have five, some have two, some have one. Now, the two-talent man was not judged according to the ability of the five-talent man. The two-talent man heard, well done, good and faithful servant, even though he didn't bring back five more talents. He had two because that's what he was able to do. The Lord didn't expect him to do more than what he's able to do. He has the two. He increased the two. The Lord said, well done. Same reward. Same reward for the two-talent man as for the five-talent man. The Lord didn't expect the one-talent man to produce even the two. But what did He expect? Do something with the one. He didn't even do something with the one. The Lord will judge us according to our ability, according to the opportunities that He's enabled us to have and to do. The Lord will judge each one based according to our abilities, not according to somebody else's ability. Now, something we can all do, the Lord reminds us of. There are some things, as I said, that will overlap. In the latter part of this chapter, here's something the Lord is saying. We can all do things like this. Look at it again with me. In chapter 25, 35, hungry, you gave me something to eat. Thirsty, something to drink. Stranger, you invited it in. Me in. Naked, you clothed me. Sick, you visited me. In prison, you came to me. Now, there are certain things all of us, to some degree and in some capacity, we can do. Not everybody can be an evangelist or a deacon or an elder or maybe even a Bible class teacher. But can you give somebody a drink of water? Anybody here that can't give somebody a drink of water? Anybody here that can't provide clothing to somebody? Anybody here that can't give them a meal? Anybody here that can't visit somebody that may be sick, or at least in our day and age, you can get on the phone and call them up. How convenient. And we don't even do that. Shameful. We just get dial a number, or by dial a number, I'm really going back, aren't I? Dial a number. The old rotary phones, right? Boy, I dated myself, didn't I? We had one phone. It was sitting in one place. I think five numbers. Five numbers back then. But now you just punch numbers on a phone, you know, little computers, and you can call somebody, say, how you doing? You can be that Gail Conway, constantly calling, constantly writing letters, emails, sending emails, you know. You can do that. Who here cannot do that? We can all just send a note of encouragement or just greet somebody or offer some kind of help to somebody. Stop being so caught up in your own life. Other people have needs, and you'll find, remarkably, some of those needs outweigh yours. They have problems too, and some of their problems are greater than yours. Stop being so consumed with your own problems. Get out of that little selfish cocoon you've made for yourself and realize there's a world out there, a world of need. I urge you to do that because in the judgment you won't be able to make any excuses. Whatever excuses you may have now in the judgment, they won't hold up. They won't hold up. That's what Matthew 25 is saying. You know, we have abilities and talents, and here's something we can all do, these things right here. Every one of us. You're going to remember this lesson one of these days, and some of you are not going to remember it in a good way. Yeah, I could have done that. I could have said that. It was so simple. There it was. I could have said something to him or her. I could have done it, but I didn't. It's called selfishness. How hard is it to extend your hand and say hello? To say, good to see you. To offer a phone call. To write somebody a little note. You can all do that. We don't have any excuses. If we want the Lord to say well done someday, then we need to get serious about our stewardship. Fourth, remember we are stewards of all we have entrusted to us. All of us have been entrusted with something. It's in your possession. The question is, what will you do with it today, not tomorrow? Well, you're right. One of these days, not on the calendar. Today, what are you going to do with the abilities and talents God has given to you? To him who much is given, Jesus said, much is required. Luke chapter 12, verse 48. And then the final point in the lesson, we must take our stewardship seriously. We may consider ourselves the one talent man, but we're still expected by the Lord to use the one we have and not bury it in the ground. We cannot excuse ourselves from service because we only have, well, just one talent. This man was condemned, not because he had less than others, less ability, less opportunity. Not because he was a murderer. Not because he was a drunkard, an adulterer, a liar, idolater, greedy, blasphemer, or committed some other heinous crime against God and humanity. He was condemned. Because he was lazy. He didn't take his stewardship seriously. His life was fruitless. This world was not better off because he lived. He wasted his life. He wasted God's grace, which was abundant, and we all have it abundantly. His was the sin of selfishness and wastefulness of time and opportunity. We should all remember God knows what we could and should be doing. He knows. So what are we waiting for? Let's lift up our heads. Know God is the great enabler. Read His Word. Pray for His strength. And let's go out in the mission field and let's serve Him. Let's do God's work today. Let's get busy doing what God would have us to do. Some people act as if they're waiting for a sign. Something's going to hit them on the head, you know, or lightning's going to strike or something like that. And like the man is, you know, out plowing his field and God gave me a sign. No, God gave you a brain to say, get out of the field and lightning storm. That's what he did. If you're waiting for a sign, realize the sign has been given. The death, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That's your sign. The death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And our faith, as Eric pointed out in the supper this morning, is based on that. There's your sign. the death and the resurrection of Jesus, and now exaltation. That's the sign. And so, having received the sign from heaven, Jesus Christ has come. Jesus Christ lived a perfect life. He died on the cross to save you from your sins. He was raised from the dead. He's now exalted in heaven. And one of these days, we're going to stand before Him as Lord in Christ. Let's be good stewards of what He's entrusted us with, because He will judge us based upon the things He's entrusted to us. Let's be good stewards in this family. How can we serve one another? What can I do, Lord? What can I do? Not what's the least I can do and get by. What can I do for you and be a good steward of what you've given to me? All of us have this responsibility. It's not a duty, it's a life principle. If you would pick up your song books once again, we're going to sing that song, 641. 641. And I know it's a pretty new song to many of you, maybe most of you. And because of that, I want to lead the song with a familiar tune. Okay? And the familiar tune is the tune of Amazing Grace. So I know it's written differently, but I want us to be able to sing the song together. And I think all of us know the tune Amazing Grace. Okay? So no excuses for not singing. So Amazing Grace, we'll sing all three verses, and just keep following that tune all the way through here.